Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by Cody Thompson, my co-host. Hello, Cody.
Hey, Pat. How's it going?
Very good. Also, we got Tracy on board. How you doing, Trace?
I'm doing great. How are you?
And Matt on the computer, our engineer. We don't have a topic today. What are we calling this today, Cody?
Speed dating with Pat and Cody.
So that's right.
Speed dating. Buckle up. Buckle up.
Yeah. Because this is going to be one of those things where we're going to sit down and answer a bunch of questions very fast, lightning fast. So essentially, I think we have like 15 different topics because we've been getting a lot of questions from listeners. And we went through that. I guess Tracy and Matt, you guys poured through all of that and said, hey, here's the most common things we get asked about. And we are going to answer those questions today as best we can. Now, I will tell you right now, I have no idea what these questions are. So it's going to be off the top of my head and Cody's head.
So, going to be a surprise.
Yeah, I like this. So let's start speed dating now. What do you got for me, Trace?
All right. So your first question is, I don't know where to start. Tell me where to start.
That's what the question is.
Yeah.
All right.
I love your material, but I don't know where to begin.
Oh, I was going to say, at the beginning, there's this song from The Sound of Music where start at the very beginning or something like that. I don't know. My wife loves The Sound of Music. So do I. Anyway, so here's the thing, though. This is actually a really good question. And let's say we're talking to a leader, right, Cody? Start with the concept and the book, the motive, which is why are you leading in the first place? Why are you doing any of this? Because if your motive is good, which means it's to serve others, to serve your organization, to serve customers, then you're fine. And then you can go on to the next part. But if your motive is flawed, which is you're there to serve yourself because you like the economics of being a leader and you think it's kind of cool or you can make good money or you can have a lot of power and control over your life, that's not a good motive for being a leader. So the first place to start is by checking your motive for being a leader in the first place. What do you think, Cody?
You know, your stuff is really interesting, Pat, in the sense that I feel like most leaders that find their way to your stuff are seeking, like they're leading for the right reason. They want to do better. They want to serve their constituents better. So I feel like a majority of them are already there. And that, because like, you don't go to the people who call the doctor get well, you know, and the people who are reward centered are not out there often trying to find what's the book that's going to help my team or my company or my organization thrive.
Okay, so good.
I feel like you're absolutely right. If you haven't started there, start there. But then the very next place is vulnerability and trust.
Yes, exactly. Which is not one book or one model. It's really at the very base of everything we do is the people sitting around the team. We were just with a client yesterday, Cody, and they were talking about one of their employees. And they were like, I don't know if he's right for the business or if he should be in this job or if he fits here. The client said he doesn't take feedback well. He doesn't admit when he does something wrong. And we said, if he can't do that, then he doesn't belong. So the beginning is, can people be vulnerable?
We said, of all the things you said about the growth of the business and the worries and the strategic concerns and all this stuff, the one thing that worries us most is what you said about him being defensive when you give him feedback. If you can't do that, so it's almost a non-starter.
And you know what their reaction was? They're like, you're totally right. That's the thing that bothers us the most. And if he can't do that, then we got to get rid of him. So it was really a good thing. So start with check your motive. But if your motive is right, and you're right, Cody, a lot of people's are, then go to build trust and vulnerability with the people you work with. Okay, next question.
Awesome. So that is related to my next question. Can you be too vulnerable?
No, you can't be too honestly vulnerable. But if you can do it in the wrong way where you become inappropriately needy. And so being too vulnerable is like, no, you have to be honest with people about who you are. Now, that doesn't mean you bring every personal problem to work every day, you know, because that's more a lack of emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to true vulnerability, it's like, you can't hide and pretend you're not something that you are. You have to be completely, there's no measure on authenticity. You have to be completely authentic, but you have to have good judgment around what to share. What do you think, Cody? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. I think there is one nuance that would be interesting to talk about, which is when we talk about vulnerability, we sort of presuppose that there's a group of people who are humble enough to engage in this type of conversation. If someone were to say, hey, is it possible to be too vulnerable? Well, if you're in a room with a bunch of other people that are unwilling to be vulnerable, it might be, you know, there might, you might want to reconsider that, you know, that you have to have that type of relationship where you know someone is not going to use your vulnerability against you. Mm-hmm. And that's why we start really small and sort of dip our toe in the vulnerability thing. We use things like the team effectiveness exercise, which isn't too vulnerable, but it's, you know, like an on-ramp to vulnerability.
I think you're thinking about the personal histories, right?
Yeah. Oh, the personal histories. Yeah, that one. That's right.
Yes. So you're right. Yes, you can be too vulnerable if you're with people you don't trust. But assuming that you're sitting around with a team, there's not really a too... You don't have to worry about being too vulnerable. You just have to have good judgment.
The only other thing that I would add is, I love when you say this, when you're speaking, or I've heard you say it in a variety of contexts, is when we talk about vulnerability, we're obviously talking about things like, hey, you're better at this than me. Oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong. I messed that up. But if someone's coming in every day and saying like, hey, I screwed that up. Hey, sorry guys, really dropped the ball there. That's actually a competency problem and not a vulnerability problem.
Right.
And I do think that's great for people to hear, because it doesn't mean that someone who walks in every day and says, hey, sorry, my bad, that is what we're after. That's a competency issue that we need to address, not a vulnerability like celebration.
Yeah. And if you make 5 mistakes, people shouldn't go, you know, I should probably only admit 3 of them because 4 would be too vulnerable. No, 5 for 5 is what you want. That's what we mean here. It's like, you got to be completely vulnerable. Now, if you make 5 mistakes in the only 5 things you're working on, you might want to question whether or not that's the job for you. But that's a different issue. That's a competency one. Yep. So that's a good clarification. Okay, Tracy, what's next?
Okay, so I'm going to stay on the vulnerability topic. So how do I keep building vulnerability-based trust on my team? If I've already started, how do I continue to do that without being too redundant? Maybe give me some tools that I could use.
That's a good question, where this is off the top of our head. What I would say is this: vulnerability is always being renewed because new things happen. And as Cody just said, like, vulnerability is saying, oh, I need help, or I made a mistake, or you're smarter than I am. Teach me how to be more like you. Or even, I'm sorry I was unfair to you yesterday. Well, every day presents new opportunities for vulnerability. And so rather than making it just like an exercise, I would say just exercise it every day. And it starts with the leader. So here's the thing. If you want vulnerability to continue and even to go deeper, what you have to do is make sure you are constantly being the first one to jump into the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And ask yourself every day, did I hide something from people because I was too worried about them knowing it? Or was I completely open?
I love it. I'm going to continue on the teamwork theme, and I'm going to go into conflict. Can you have too much conflict? This is such a common question.
You can have the wrong kind of conflict, and you can engage in conflict around things that aren't necessary. So I'll use a great example. You're thinking about restructuring your company or redirecting your company in a strategic way. No one should leave anything off the table around that decision. So there's no way to have, everybody has to weigh in and debate on a team. Okay. So can you have too much conflict? No. Now, if people start to repeat themselves because all the conflict necessary has been had, that's where the leader has to go, okay, it seems like we're repeating ourselves. I'm not sure this is actually any new information. I think we're going to close the round of conflict, and I am going to break the tie. I am going to step in and make this decision. So I suppose you can beat a dead horse after a while and realize we're never going to completely agree, and the leader's job is to break the tie. So yeah, you can have, the conflict can go on too long because there's nothing new. The other way to have too much conflict is if it's like, what are we going to have for, where are we going to go to eat at lunch today? Well, we're going to have Mexican food. No, let's debate that. I like Greek food. And it's like, sometimes you just got to go, this is stupid. We shouldn't even be arguing about this.
Mm-hmm.
So, but can you have too much disagreement around an important topic if everything hasn't been aired? No.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Code?
You're right. It's the type of conflict, because there's very little of the wrong conflict is too much. You know, very little of the conflict that is posturing and not rooted in finding the right answer, that's already too much. But as much of the right conflict as possible is great. And I think about some of the conversations that we've had, Pat. I think one of the things that could prevent people from having the right amount of conflict is we might be in one meeting where we're talking about a strategic issue, and then we kind of close that meeting and we think, and then I'll go home and I'll think about like, it still doesn't sit right with me. But some people might go to work and go, well, that conversation's over. We can't re-engage that. But what we will often do is go, hey, I just still don't feel great. We need to get back in the room and we still need to hammer this out.
Yeah, that's not too much conflict. That's continuing it because more information and perspective is coming. You know what I realized recently? I talked to this woman, a wonderful woman who's a therapist, and she said, there's a difference between, and this is all new for me, like anger, for instance. There's clean anger, which is good, which is like you're frustrated and you're telling somebody why. And then there's unclean anger, which is sarcasm or kind of bitter sidestepping things. And like sarcasm can be more aggressive and hurtful than clean anger. Mm-hmm. And so if you're in a room and you're like, Cody, I'm really frustrated with you because I just don't think you've heard me. And it feels like you're not listening to what I'm saying. That is not like aggressive. That is direct. Right. Versus, well, okay, Cody, if you think so and you don't think my opinion's that important, then why don't you just make that decision on your own? That's actually really aggressive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I love what you said, Cody. The wrong kind of conflict is always too much. And the right kind of conflict is always the right amount, as long as it's not because the leader is unwilling to step in and say, we've beat this horse enough.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. How do I kindly hold someone accountable? Accountability is a huge issue on teams. So how do I do it kindly?
Well, I should jump right in and answer this because I suck at this. And the best thing for me to do is to tell people that I am not good at it and that I'm depriving them of what they need. I think the first thing we have to understand is holding somebody accountable is an act of love.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then sit down with somebody and at the beginning of the conversation say, I don't like to do what I'm about to do, but it's for your benefit. So I'm going to do it. So if you just kind of out yourself and let the air out of the balloon, then they're going to be like, oh, okay. I've done it with you, right, Trace?
Oh, yeah.
Years ago, remember? Do you want to tell people about that?
Yeah. So you sat down to have a review with me and you got to my weaknesses, basically, or, you know, where my struggles were. And you said to me, oh, you know, you do such a great job. And I just stopped you. And I said, Pat, I know you struggle with this. Just tell me. Like, just don't hold back. Just tell me. I know this is a struggle of yours. And we had such a good conversation.
Yes. And you have smelled so much better since that day that I had to talk to you. And I'm just teasing. That's a joke because once a manager made Tracy, who was the HR representative in a different company, tell somebody that they smelled bad because the leader didn't want to have to do it.
Not a good day. Not a good day.
So the accountability, you got to let people know when you're not good at it, just put it out because it's in their best interest.
Okay, so the next part of that question is, do you do that publicly or privately?
Ah, you want to take this, Cody? We've talked about this so many times. You can answer it as well as I can or better.
I think one of the reasons that accountability is hard is not just because it's hard to hold a colleague accountable. It's that we don't do this in our lives in general. So it feels so foreign that I feel like the more you just do it, like we brought on someone and the very first conversation, I talked to him over the phone and we were trying to figure out a start date and then things changed. And it was the very first time we sat down in person, I said, hey, you know, the way that conversation happened, you told me one thing and another thing happened. Please don't do that again. That kind of frustrated me and made me feel like I wasn't on top of the scenario. And it didn't have to be that weird. And he was like, oh, thank you for telling me that. But I think that the more it happens, it's more of a resistance because we're like, it never happens in our lives. The more you can do it, I think people do it privately because they think, oh no, this will be easier. Or it'll just not be as weird. But if you do it more and more often publicly, it doesn't become as big of a deal and it can happen really naturally in front of other people and not feel like the world is ending.
One of my rules, Cody, for along those lines is if you're giving somebody feedback, not because you think they're a bad employer, you're questioning whether they belong, they're fine. It's just you need to tell them. It's actually better to do it in front of others because one, everybody realizes, hey, this happens to everyone. Two, they learn what you've held that person accountable to. Now they've heard it too. And they go, hey, I was going to do the same thing. Now I know. Three, they realize you're the kind of leader that does hold people accountable. But if it's a sensitive subject or you're starting to wonder if that person belongs or it's something that other people hearing it in real time is going to actually make it harder for them to hear, then you should do it privately. But I think it's probably 80-20, 80% in front of the team, 20% privately. That's a rule of thumb that I probably think is pretty accurate.
Well, and like you say, Pat, the best teams in the world, peer-to-peer accountability is what they use. So it's not like, oh, it's not always top-down. And the only way to get peers to hold each other accountable is if you, the leader, do it openly and they see that you're going to do it anyway. So then they go ahead before you even have an opportunity and go to their colleague, friend, whatever, and say, hey, you're not doing what we said we were going to do. So I think the only way to get there is to do it publicly. If you did that all behind closed doors, they'll never get there.
I agree. And the culture won't change because people won't think it's happening. All right. What's next, Tracy?
All right. So the next question I have is around the concept of team number one. How do I apply the team number one concept to matrixed organizations or teams?
Okay. Great question. And team number one is even more important in matrixed organizations. So let me explain what team number one is. Team number one is just this. Let's say you're in a company, big company, little company, whatever, and there's the CEO, the leader of the company, and he or she has a group of direct reports. Okay. That is the team number one of the organization. That's the leadership team, team number one. What that means is one of those direct reports, let's call them the head of marketing, that team that he or she is a member of has to be more important. That's their team number one, not the team they lead. Because if the head of marketing says, well, my team number one is the marketing department, and my secondary team is the executive team that I'm on, that's terrible. That's the Congress, the United Nations, everybody gets together to lobby for their constituents. So team number one means the team at the top has to be the first priority of everyone on that team. Okay, makes sense. The question then is, how do you do that if you have a matrixed organization where people work on multiple organizations, there's dotted lines everywhere, and that's more and more common? Well, here's the thing. If team number one is crystal clear in an organization at the top, then the people that are down there working on these in these matrixed organizations, when they have a conflict because they're not sure what their solid line is, what their dotted line is, who to listen to, if there is a team number one, they can quickly elevate that to that level and say, you guys referee this for us. And that team will get together and say, oh, here's the right answer. Here's your clarity. Now go. When there is not team number one at the top, the people down below that are living in those dotted line matrixed organizations, they are left to fight bloody, unwinnable battles with one another. And the people at the top will go, look at those people. They're not working together. Yeah, it's because you guys aren't aligned and giving them the kind of clarity that allows them to navigate difficult decisions in a matrixed environment. And so that's my answer. I'm sticking to it. What do you think, Cody?
No further comments at all. Okay.
Awesome. So here's a common question. How do I influence my boss around these concepts?
Yeah. Upward management.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody asked me this on a radio show the other day. Here's the deal. We should all influence our bosses. Okay. And we often don't because we think that our bosses are leading and managing exactly the way they want to. We assume, well, they're being completely intentional and they thought of everything. So if I give them any suggestions, it's essentially me saying, whatever you're doing is wrong, even though you love doing it. And so we say, they're probably not going to change. Well, I think 8 out of 10 leaders, if approached correctly, will benefit from a suggestion from a subordinate. As long as it's delivered without condescension, without bitterness, and kindly. And so if you see something that your manager can do, I say, go talk to them about it. But do it in a way that says, I don't think I could do your job better than you. I'm only offering this to you for your benefit. I hope it doesn't come across poorly, but I'd rather take the risk of telling you something that could benefit you and the organization than not. And you're feel free to disregard this if you like, but I'm going to offer this to you. There's not very many leaders in the world that are going to punish or even look down on somebody for doing that. They might ignore it, but there's no skin off your nose if they do that. So I say be a hero to your manager and kindly share with them things that could make them better. Now, if you think they're the kind of person that would completely resent that, or you do it again and again and again and they ignore it and they never get better, well, then maybe at least you know now that it's probably time to shine up your resume and to move on. But way too many people never take the step of trying to manage upward. And they deprive their manager of improvement and they deprive themselves of what I think is a really career-enhancing opportunity. And Cody, I mean, technically you work for me. You don't hold back.
I was just going to say, let's see, how do I tell my boss? No. I think the only other thing I'd add to that, Pat, and because you have said, you know, people used to shove you in the CEO's office and say, you tell them, you know, right. Like you tell them what you see. I think that the other thing to consider is before those moments, before you're in the boss's office, if you're the type of person that is always trying to tell people the truth on your team and you're gaining credibility, they're seeing that happening, that you're trying to serve your team and serve others, whether it's in a strategic meeting or giving feedback to someone, then you've demonstrated your willingness to want to tell the kind truth to other people. So it's not just like you're coming in like, oh, hey, I got something that you need to hear. So I think that the more credibility you build doing that in general on your team gives you more credibility in the room when it matters even more with your superior. Yeah. So do that often. Tell the truth as often as you can. You know, give feedback to people when you think that they need to hear it and do it kindly. And I think it'll serve you really well.
I do too. And you know, this is an employee's market, by the way. So if you do this, if you become that person and nobody ever listens to you, find an organization that's going to listen. You know, so it's, if there's ever a time in my career when a person could go and kindly say to their manager, I think this would make things better without risk, it's probably right now because there's so many places that need good people. I guess that's my way of saying I agree, Cody. Okay, great. Tracy, what else? What's next?
I love it. So let's say you can't influence your leader. Can I actually create a healthier organization or a healthier team on my own if the larger company is not committed to it?
Right. So you're the head of marketing. Can I make my marketing organization healthy if the CEO I work for isn't healthy and the team I'm on? The answer is yes, but with limitation. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, there's a ceiling there.
Yeah.
But the beauty, what do you think? What do you think I'm going to say next, Cody?
Boy, I mean, sometimes it can inspire the rest of the organization or other teams.
Right. I'm thinking of Stephen Covey and his circle of influence. So you go, gosh, maybe I can't change the CEO, but I can change my department. And what happens is, so you're saying I will focus on my circle of influence, the things where I have permission to do stuff, and I will not get too bogged down by my circle of concern that's outside of my influence. And what happens is people start to go, hey, what are you guys doing in marketing? Why does everything work so well? Help us do that. And suddenly your circle of influence is growing. Mm-hmm. But if you start by saying, well, I'm not going to fix the marketing department until I can fix the CEO above me, then your marketing department's going to get worse and nobody's going to ask you for your input then because your circle of influence is shrinking. So the answer is yes. And you may actually be able to crack the code on helping your manager and the rest of the organization. But if you can't, at least you're going to make your organization better. And later in your career, when you're in charge, you're going to be that much better. Yeah, Cody?
I was thinking about, it was probably 5 years ago that a CEO came into our office who was the CEO of a giant food conglomerate company. And he was telling us about his like rise to becoming the CEO. And he worked there for 25 years. He started, I think, in the very bottom. And they ended up calling him, his nickname at the company was the Trash Man. Because what they would do is they found out that he made one team that he led really good. And then that team would get really effective and cohesive and start crushing it. And so they'd put him on this other team that was in a dire situation. And he'd go do the same thing at that team. And he literally, as the Trash Man, just went from team to team, fixing these teams across the organization. And they promoted him to CEO. And I just thought, man, that's such a wonderful way of saying, hey, I have circle of influence right here on my own team that eventually grew. And he became the CEO of that company doing that very thing over and over again.
Yeah. I remember that day.
Here's our last question. We're going to end with this one. So once people get the whole concept of organizational health and start implementing it, what is the number one mistake that they make?
I think they probably think that it's a destination or something they do once rather than an ongoing daily journey. It's kind of like, what's the biggest mistake people think when they're trying to make their marriage better? They go, oh, we went on a retreat and okay, we're done. Yep. What's next? They don't see it as being every single day.
Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly it, Pat. I think they think, oh, you know what we'll do? We'll focus on this. They see it as another thing for them to do. The same way, imagine going to your doctor and your doctor says, okay, hey, to get healthy, you're going to need to sleep well, eat well, exercise. And then you do that for a month and you go, okay, I'm done with that. Now what do I do? And it's like, no. The rest of your life to be healthy, you have to focus on those three things. The rest of this stuff is ancillary. And so I think there is a danger of going into it thinking, oh boy, if we put 2 months of energy into this, we're going to get healthy. Then we can start focusing again on the smart side. And the answer is, boy, if you take your eye off the healthy side, it's going to just exacerbate those same problems over and over again.
You know, it's funny because I'm trying to lose like 8 pounds, and I keep thinking when I lose those 8 pounds, I can eat pizza again.
Yeah,
and it's like, no, that's not how it works.
Totally.
And I think in organizations, you're right. It's like it has to be a lifestyle change, and it has to be a mindset change. And every day you have to appreciate the organizational health is like manifests itself in regular interactions. And every day you have to recommit to that. And that's going to bring us to the end of our speed dating. I think we've gotten to know each other pretty well, Cody.
Yeah. Tracy, did we pass? Did we get an F or a C?
No, you guys crushed it. You crushed it.
All righty. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope that we gave you some nuggets of practical wisdom. I think of my friend Will and Joy and Garth out there when I'm doing these. I think about, gosh, I hope there's stuff in there that they can go out and use tomorrow. So for everybody that's on here, we want to thank you for listening to us. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.